All right, cool. So welcome to this week's podcast. This one is going to be a little bit different as we are stepping things up a little bit. So if you follow the podcast, you might have seen some changes on Spotify. The naming might be a little bit different now because we are currently in the middle of a rebranding. And the podcast is going to now be called Dive Into Product. Same old stuff that you would expect us to have here on the podcast. We'll still be talking about product design, product management, product career insights, etc., etc., as we always had. Expect to see a little bit more of change on the rebranding and on the style of how we will be doing things. So getting into today's podcast, I want to talk about a couple of things that we have posted recently on the Do Better UX blog. By the way, if you have not noticed, we now have a daily blog, and we also now have a Dive Into Product monthly report where we actually get much more deeper into some of the things that we are touching on a daily basis within that month. If that sounds like something that you might be interested in, please consider going to dobetterux.com right now and subscribing to the monthly newsletter. So I want to talk about two topics that we have in the two latest blog posts as we record this show. And I want to talk about AI and get a little bit into it. I understand that the AI has become kind of like the buzzword of the industry right now. And I wanted to talk about two main points. Now, on the website currently, we have two different blog posts around this, but I am going to speak about them as in one thing for this week's podcast. So the first one is obviously around Sora. So I'm going to touch on that one quickly, because it's hot news currently and I just need to cover it. And the second part is about slightly older news, and this will be around the AI pin, kind of like the wearables and kind of like how that might look like in redefining the way that we design for these interfaces. I want to get into Apple Vision Pro a little bit. So yeah, that's what I'm going to cover today. Let's start with Sora. So we all know the legendary video of Will Smith eating spaghetti, right? And that has been kind of like the benchmark of what we had about a year ago, probably about 10-ish months ago, right? And recently we have seen all these videos now. If you don't know what I'm talking about here, I have the links to the blog posts in the description, wherever you're listening to this from or watching. We have all seen these really good videos, which are almost kind of like the images that we've seen coming from things like Midjourney and DALL-E. From an image side, and now it's kind of like turning into motion. And we're starting to see a different wave and a different generation of this video AI. And it's quite an exciting time as usual. But currently it is under beta, I think. I know that Sam Altman, the CEO at OpenAI, is currently kind of taking requests and auto-generating these videos. I don't know how much time it takes to generate these videos, how many tries. If you follow him on Twitter, you'll be able to kind of see more than just kind of like what everybody has been plastering on the internet, including what OpenAI has itself posted on their YouTube channel. Right. So if you want to see more of that, check out Sam Altman's Twitter. Follow him. if you don't already, I think you should be following him. Check that out and see a little bit more around kind of like where this generative video AI is going. I think it's really getting into an exciting space. And like with AI, it's always, you know, those mixed feelings. It's a really exciting space as well as a really scary space at the same time, right? Like, is AI going to take our jobs? Of course, in the long run, it will, right? But it's really exciting to see it morph. Again, all this technology is really much in its infancy. I think sometimes we forget that there is all this technology that we're seeing here. I mean, machine learning has been there, you know, since the 80s, since the 90s, right? But we've seen really the acceleration of the development of AI probably the most over, you know, the past 2 to 3 years, right? And that is where we have seen most of this happening, and most of it coming out of OpenAI and other leading companies around it, right? But again, Sam Altman is really going all in on AI, and kind of like that's the company that's leading the pack right now. We've got Google. I want to believe that Apple is probably working on something really incredible in the background, and when they launch it, it's going to be, you know, probably have the same effect that the Apple Vision Pro has had on people over the past, you know, few weeks. And yeah, I'm interested to see what will come out of that court. Now, I have spoke about AI before, and I was like, where is Apple in this whole thing? And I think my take back then was probably like, you know, Apple is not doing much. But I have recently learned that Apple has been acquiring a lot of AI companies in the background, and hiring a lot of people who work in AI R&D. And yeah, there's probably a lot that has been cooking there. Like, we have seen the same thing happening in the VR space. Apple has been working with AR and VR, you know, kind of like adding little bits into their ecosystem on their iPhones, adding the LiDAR sensor, et cetera, things that will potentially facilitate the use of the VR headsets that they have coming up in the future, right? So I think all of this is kind of, you know, strategically placed and thought out quite well from an Apple side, right? So getting back to Sora, I think there are a couple of things that we always need to think about when this type of technologies actually get developed up to this level of refinement, right? Like, whose style of artwork is it referencing in the background to generate these videos, right? These people that it is generating, you know, what references is it getting, right? Like, who shot that original content, and how is it learning, you know, kind of like what information is it feeding from for it to learn as a generative AI model, right? There's always that ethical side of doing things, and I think we kind of always need to think about that in the background. But it is a really exciting time in seeing how much of a leap this has taken over the past year, 10 months, 11 months. I'm not really sure when the Will Smith spaghetti video came out. So let's move on to the next topic that I want to talk about today, and that is more AI. I guess probably AI is going to be quite a topical subject on a lot of people's feeds, as well as here on Dive Into Product. I need to get used to saying that. I'm used to saying not a UX designer, or, you know, do better UX. But yeah, now we are Dive Into Product. And I hope that I get used to talking about that. So AI is probably going to be quite a big topical point of discussion over the next few months on this channel, as much as you would find it in other channels, because it is things that are realistically impacting our world on an everyday basis. And yeah, it will be doing disservice if we don't stay ahead of the curve and be able to talk about these things, share the ideas, and be able to see how we can stay relevant, number one, kind of like future-proofing our careers as UX designers, product designers, as well as how do we make sure that there is ethical design, as well as we really understand the real-life use cases that most of these technologies can actually help users with out there in the real world, right? So let's talk about the next batch of AI things that I want to talk about. And these are products that were launched a few months far apart. And this is the Rabbit R1. Now, if you haven't heard of the Rabbit R1, is a handheld device that is designed for AI from the ground up. And the other product that I want to talk about is the Humane AI Pin. But I think more than anything, I think these two products are kind of the leaders right now in a new product category that we are seeing emerging just based on AI, right? I mean, if AI was not here, I don't think that this world of products would be possible, or even people will be thinking about creating such products. Now, this new product category, I want to call it probably AI wearables, right? I think we've got things like the Apple Watch and other kind of like gizmos, like rings and things that we put on our bodies. We've got like, you know, glasses, etc., etc., that, you know, kind of like fit in into the things that we wear every day. And most of those devices have got the potential to be AI powered in one way or the other, right? Using apps that can be designed for them, or kind of like adopted from iOS apps or Android apps, or, you know, iPad apps adopted for, you know, those platforms as the watch, etc., etc., right? But we're starting to see a different category here where we've got the hardware built from the ground up purely for interacting with AI. And the main use case that we are seeing here is kind of being always on and listening to you so that it can easily understand the context and help you throughout the day to, you know, do different things. Now, the different companies have got different approaches, of course. If you talk about the Humane AI Pin, I think because they're from Apple, both of the founders are executives from Apple, and everything about the company is very Apple-esque, right? Even the way that they did the demo, I'm sure you have seen it on the internet somewhere, right? So they are very much privacy focused. You will see that the Humane AI Pin has got a button where you kind of like press to interact with it, and only then will you activate the microphone or the camera to actually interact with the device. Otherwise, it's just kind of like sitting there in idle mode and not listening or anything. Whereas if you take a look at the approach that some of the other companies in this kind of like category are looking at, there is a company called Tab, I think, and a company called Rewind, I think. Again, the details are in the blog post if you want to read that, if you're a reader. Those companies are taking a different approach where, you know, their devices are always listening, and you can kind of like give them, you can ask them anything, and they kind of like know your context based on, you know, kind of like them keeping tabs on you all the time. Now, before we get into this whole thing, I think the biggest thing that you are hearing there that we heard when we kind of like started having Amazon Alexa speakers and Siri speakers and Google speakers in our houses is, are they always listening, and what happens to that data? Is it easy, you know, for people to kind of like hack it and access this data and, you know, kind of like all those things, right, above everything. So privacy is always a really big thing and a really big touchy subject around this. So that is always something that we'll be worried about. That's why I started talking about how, you know, the different approaches of the different companies out there are having, you know, always on versus kind of like triggered and, you know, ready to go. So if you look at the Rabbit R1, it's not an always on listening device. You kind of need to press a button to push to interact with it. But I think what makes the Rabbit R1 a much more superior product is that it's more than just, you know, a button, and it uses familiar interface that human beings have been using for probably, you know, a lot of decades now, which is, you know, having a screen. So it's got a screen, it's got a camera, it's got a push button where you can push the button and interact with it. You can prompt it to use the camera to look in the environment, to, you know, ask it what's in the fridge and what can you cook with what's currently in the fridge, or you can, you know, give it a prompt to, you know, give you maybe translate a sign or things like that, right? So I think there's a little bit more use cases with the Rabbit R1, and it's really a well thought out product, not meant to be a wearable, but probably you know, something that you'll carry. I don't know if it's designed to replace your phone, or is it just something that is designed to complement your phone when you carry it around, right? Versus the your main AI pin is something that you kind of like have on your piece of clothing. You've got the battery kind of like sticking on the back, and, you know, your piece of clothing in the middle, and you've got that thing. The magnets there really need to be good, because you don't want to be like dropping your I don't know, I think it's like $700, something like that. Okay, so I couldn't find the price, but it's a very expensive product, right? And you wouldn't want to waste that amount of money purely on kind of like a product that, you know, could kind of fall because it's stuck on magnets. Anyway, your main AI pin is a whole different approach. You're supposed to wear it. It doesn't have a screen. It kind of like projects this laser thing. From my experience, laser projected items are really difficult, especially if the surface is not flat enough or colored, you know, bright or dark enough, depending on the color of the laser that you're projecting on it, right? So there is all these moving parts that I think the Humane AI pin will have. However, I think both these products are really the leaders in pioneering this from the ground up design of AI products, whether they are wearables or something that you're going to carry around. You know, they've got different use cases. If you look at the Rabbit R1, its main use case is that you're kind of like logging into all of your different apps, and you can instruct it to do different things for you, to actually action items for you, which is something that we have seen a lot of AI not being able to do. So most of it has been generative and actually not kind of like actioning items. So with Rabbit R1, we're seeing a different type of AI that they're calling the large action model, LAM. And large action model is different from kind of like the large language model type of AIs that we have been seeing around. And yeah, it's interesting to see LAM and possibly how that could be used with companies like Apple as well as Google in kind of like their smart speakers and things like that, and how designers can design around that, right? So now with this whole wave of AI and you know, different use cases that are coming out, even different hardware, right? The next thing that I always think about is, how do we stay ahead of the curve as product designers and UX designers to, number one, stay relevant, of course, and number two, really pioneer how we create these experiences? Like most of us, the designers that are alive today and actually active in the market, experienced enough and have the right opportunities to morph and change the future of how apps and how we use these technologies have only been around for kind of like the screen revolution, right? And I think this is a whole new revolution where we've got more voice interaction, AI, and I think with virtual reality and more of special computing becoming more of a mainstream thing with the Apple Vision Pro, I think it really helps for a lot of us starting to consider how do we start shaping the future of how this technology will be used, you know, in the years to come, in the next decades, et cetera, right? Both from how do we make it ethical and how do we actually use it for day-to-day instances that, you know, we find ourselves using the mobile phone and, you know, kind of like things like tablets, et cetera, right? So what can we do if you're a product designer or UX designer today? What are some of the actionable things that you can actually do to stay ahead of the curve within these technologies? Now, I know most of these items are actually not accessible to you right now, and you won't have access to them, right? But what I would really do if I were you, what I am doing currently, right, is getting into really understanding how this technology works from the ground up so that we understand it as how we'll kind of like understand HTML and CSS these days, as, you know, kind of like general UX design knowledge, right? Understanding how it works will really help us design different experiences as we understand the world around us and some of the contexts that this technology can interact with the world around us, right? So there's a lot of potential for us to actually pioneer different design styles, different design languages, and different ways to interact with these technologies today, right? Of course, we've got a level of making sure that we're kind of like doing responsible, ethical design and development. That is something that is just out there, right? Another thing that, you know, kind of like can do is to work with the technologies that we have access with. And those are things like, you know, the smart speakers that we have, and see how things like conversational UX design works and how, you know, people are, you know, designing for those type of experiences already, right? I think there has been a lot of buzz around the Apple Vision Pro, but I think that, you know, there's a lot to learn within the Meta Quest world and the VR, AR, special computing world that has existed over the past, you know, 4, 5, 6 years, if not 10 years. So there is quite a lot that we can learn from already the technology that is out there that we might actually have access to, right? I understand that kind of like all these emerging things feel like they are new and not accessible, but this technology has been around us for years, if not decades, and it's just a matter of us understanding it a little bit more and understanding the fact that consumers are now having the accessibility of the hardware, and now we just need to be able to create the experiences, you know, and the software for them to be able to use these things more efficiently, effectively, and in ways that is helpful to everybody in everyday lives. So that is the main two items that I wanted to cover around AI. Well, you can call them main two items. I want to take a short break, and I want to invite you guys over to Do Better UX. We don't really get any monetary kind of, you know, value out of this. We don't have any sponsors. We don't have, you know, kind of any way to make money out of this. And I am actually not trying to make any money out of this. The whole point of this whole Do Better UX creation for me is to be able to share my journey as a product designer, as a UX designer, and share some of the experiences so that you don't make the same mistakes that I am making. But not only that, I also want to invite everybody out there to be able to come have this conversation with me. So if you are a person who is in the product design space, whether you are a startup founder who is looking into building your own products and you'd like to be part of a community, or you are a product designer, UX designer who is trying to level up their skills, take your career to the next level, I would like you to connect with me over on LinkedIn. And yeah, that's all I'm asking for. All right, let's jump back into it. So the next thing that I want to talk about, and the last thing, is the Apple Vision Pro. Now, I have watched probably at this time more than 100 hours. I did a blog post on the 13th of February where I was saying that I've probably watched about 100 hours. And I think probably now it has been more than 100 hours because the content just keeps on coming, right? I'm also sure that your feeds, your social media feeds have been bombarded by this thing. I think now it is coming down a little bit, but I mean, all the influencers were trying to make sure that they get their $3,500 worth, $4,000 worth of money back around this, right? We have seen it everywhere. We've spent a lot of time. So I'm not really going to talk about it that much as, you know, getting into review. I'm sure you have seen all the people wearing it for 24 hours in it, walking around the city, skating. Funny thing is that a lot of the people who were walking around and doing stuff, they say that it does say that you should not be doing that because it might cause injury, you might bump into stuff or fall because there is a gap in between your eyes and the lenses, and you know, that kind of like has a blind area between your field of view, right? So they kind of like caution you and warn you. But we've seen people kind of, you know, living throughout their days 24 hours a day in the headsets, no problem, not falling or bumping into anything, which I found quite amusing considering the, you know, people complaining about the weight and things like that. So I just wanted to cover on this podcast, obviously not a review of the Apple Vision Pro, but I wanted to talk about what I think will make this concept work. And Apple has always been a pioneer and a leader in not making new technologies, but making technologies that have already been there trend and popularize them and make them more accessible to people. So if you think about the personal computer, Microsoft was making the personal computer for quite some time, and Apple came in and made it much more popular, much more cooler to have, and much more accessible to have, right? Despite their pricey premium structure of doing business, I think that they have the ability to make a lot of things trendy and actually make them accessible and make sure that there is, you know, that product in people's hands, right? So if you look at the Apple computer, if you look at the iPhone, and now with the Apple Vision Pro, all these technologies have been there before, and Apple has just come in, really done their homework and research, and created enough trend and hype around the product to be able to actually make it popular enough and make it something that we use in our everyday lives. So I think that is one aspect of what is going to make this work. Now, we have seen the Facebook Meta Quest device been on the market the longest. I think it is currently a much more superior product than the Apple Vision Pro in purely its functionality, what you can do with it. You know, I think you can do quite more on the Quest currently than you can do on the Apple Vision Pro. I think they take the VR spatial computing space with two very different philosophies. Obviously, Apple in its own unique, sleek way. And with Facebook, I think, you know, as a company that has kind of not ran, you know, computer operating systems, they have a slightly different take on how, you know, they have taken the approach of the interface, which I feel that it's a little bit more gamified and, you know, towards kind of like the gaming world versus Apple, which is, you know, kind of like targeting the more day-to-day use productivity way of doing things. And I think as we are going to start seeing more and more software being developed for the different platforms, the more and more use cases that people will be using, you know, probably the Apple Vision Pro will be kind of like mimicked in the Meta Quest and vice versa, right? We always, you know, want to see a little bit more gaming on the Apple side than, you know, we usually actually see, right? So would like to see a little bit more of that, et cetera, et cetera. So there will be cross-pollination between the two platforms. But I think with the Apple Vision Pro coming into the market, it will actually, you know, have the trend factor, right? But the trend factor is not going to be enough, right? Again, I don't think that many designers and developers are currently focusing on these platforms because of the numbers that are there. I think for the Quest now, the numbers have kind of like went up. And I think for the Apple Vision Pro, those numbers are actually going to kind of like spike up. But to be honest, designers and developers are kind of like paid by somebody else who is, you know, a startup company, a company behind, you know, a concept or something that they want to sell and monetize out there. And if it's not just purely kind of like existing apps kind of transitioning into this special computing world, I don't really see new categories coming up unless if we really start getting into this space and creating new experiences that are purely designed from the ground up for special computing experiences, right? And not translating kind of, you know, what we have on the screens that we have currently into this world. So again, I'm going to go back into what can we do as designers and, you know, trend makers within this world, within, you know, product design and helping the world adopt this, right? I think there's a lot of work around matching what the technology does and what the real world does. I think we're kind of with every new technology, you are in a space where you have a solution looking for a problem, right? For at least the early years. And then as the, you know, technology matures, and I think that maturity really comes from actually the solution finding more problems to solve, right? So I think that's where we are, right? And the more and more problems we solve with this technology, exciting technology that we have around us, AI, spatial computing, the more that we can change and reshape the future of how we interact with technology and the internet as we progress into the future beyond 2024. So those are the topics that I wanted to cover today, a little bit heavy on the AI side. And yeah, to close off, I just want to invite you again to sign up to Dive Into Product, which is our monthly newsletter / report, where we'll be diving in a little bit more into some of the topics that we'll be posting about on a day-to-day basis on dobetterux.com. Make sure to bookmark dobetterux.com so that you can come back to it on a daily basis and see what is there. Follow myself, Varima Henry, on LinkedIn if you want to, you know, kind of get this feed and see what I am posting on a day-to-day basis. So, yeah, all the links are in the description wherever you're listening to this on or watching this. Peace.